Hey, before we dive in, I just want to talk to you about something. You know, I recently hired an intern, which, you know, huge power trip. But I got to tell you, it was a pain in the butt to find this person. I had to talk with a couple different schools. I had to fill out a whole bunch of applications. I had to go through a ton of candidates to find someone who I thought was really great. And by the way, shout out to Kaylee Raglan, who's been absolutely crushing it for me. She's doing an unbelievable job. But, you know, it took a lot of time to find her. And what I should have done is I should have just gone to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply for your job. ZipRecruiter makes hiring efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. So you got to do this. You got to go to ZipRecruiter.com. And I'm going to give you a little tip because it's going to make me look good here. Go to www.ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's my name, Z-A-K. Make sure you spell it correctly. And check it out. If you need to hire someone, if you're looking to bring someone on board, don't waste time doing the usual recruiting nonsense. Go to ZipRecruiter.com and get the job done there. Okay, I'm done talking. I've talked way too long. Let's go. Here we go. Let's dive in.
The Zach Kuhn Show.
Episode 41. Here we go. This is a really special episode. Today's guest is Pete Griffin, the CEO of Musicians on Call. In case you don't know about the organization, let me fill you in really quickly. For over 20 years, Musicians on Call has brought live and recorded music to patients, doctors, and nurses in hospitals nationwide. Throughout the organization's history, they have performed for almost a million patients. And this year, during the pandemic, when everything is shut down, the organization is about to have their largest year ever in terms of patients played for. It's unbelievable to see what they're doing. This organization does so much good. We talk about it all with Pete, and I can't wait for you guys to hear this. So he's going to tell the story best. Let's just dive in.
I'm just curious, really quickly. I was looking at your LinkedIn profile. I saw that you were backpacking in Europe for like 6 months or something. And then yeah. I watched this video that you'd posted of your entire trip, and then I saw it looked like you were running with the bulls. Did you actually do this? Did you actually run with the bulls? Is that crazy? What is that like?
It was one of the coolest things I've ever done, and it was funny because like as I was on the train heading into Pamplona, I like just finished reading Sun Also Rises, so like I was in this big like running of the bulls headspace, and got there and I really didn't know what I was getting into. Just something like I didn't do a lot of research on what actually went on and everything else, but I did it and literally ran through the streets with the bulls passing me by on either side and thankfully didn't get hurt. And then I didn't realize that when it finishes, you end up in this arena, which is packed full of people. And, you know, the bulls run in one side of the arena, out the other. And the crowd is full and you're cheering and you're like taking selfies and everything. But what I didn't realize is that after that happens, they let the bulls back in the ring like one at a time. And now you're like in the ring with a bull. And I guess the whole thing is like, you're supposed to try to like touch a bull. Like that's like the challenge, if you can like touch a bull like while it's in the ring. So I did that for like 3 or 4 bulls and ended up touching I think 2 of them before I was like, all right, I need to get out of here. I've tempted fate enough, and I crawled over the wall to get out. But it was wild. It was a lot of fun though.
Do you just show up and you kind of know what to do? Like do you just hop into the street, or is there like a check-in? Do they make you sign a waiver, or you just walk up and you go? You're running.
No, you just do it. I mean, I was traveling by myself, and so I met these as I was there on the street, I met these like 3 like Spanish guys, and I was asking them what happens, and you get in there by a certain time, and then they like finish. There's like a couple entrances, and then they like board up the street. So now you're like, you're in there. There's no way out. Like once they board the streets, like you are in there, and some people start like at the end where the arena is, And when they let the Bulls out, you just walk into the arena and you're done. So people are like, yeah, I ran with the Bulls, but they kind of were on the course and they were out. And then if you're in the beginning where the Bulls start, then the Bulls kind of run past you. And then once they run past you, like, you're done also. Like, there's nothing to do. So these guys told me, like, you want to start in the middle so that you can run and the Bulls run, you're running past you while you're running. And then you actually still get to go into the arena at the end, because once the Bulls get in the arena, they shut the arena off, so you might miss it. But it's wild because, like, they shoot off this rocket, and that lets you know that, like, the Bulls, they've opened the gate and the Bulls are out. And it's only about, like, 3 minutes between when the Bulls are out to when they get to the arena. And then they let off a second rocket to let you know that all the Bulls have left the pen. At that point, there's like 12 Bulls running through the street and you can't really see what's going on. And so, you know, all of a sudden you see like a crowd of people and everyone's kind of like tiptoeing. And then you just see people like running for their lives. And then you're like, oh my gosh, like it's happening. And these Bulls are the size of like SUVs. And the one thing you don't really realize until you're in it is that, like, it's at that point, it's all chance, because if a Bull is behind you, you can't get out of the way. Like, you just have to hope that one is not behind you, because there's no place to go. The walls are boarded. There's tons of people. And it's just like, it's really stupid. I mean, honestly, like, no one should do it. But it is quite an adrenaline rush.
I feel like I'd have like post-traumatic stress like that evening. Like, I'd be trying to go to sleep and I'd see like Bulls charging at me. Like, that's what I think that's what would happen.
You definitely have that, like, you definitely have that, like, what have I done moment when it's, like, happening and you're like, I can't, there's nothing I could do now. I just have to hope to get out of this thing.
Oh, my God. So, musicians on call, maybe famously, you could almost say, there's a waiting list to play as a musician. Musicians have, there's a waiting list to get in to play as a talented musician. Where's the, why is that? Why can't we just send musicians into hospitals everywhere and have them play for patients? Where's the red tape? Why is there a hold up for, if you're a talented musician, why can't we pair you with a room?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There is a waiting list. And the reason is because it's actually a lot harder to play in hospitals than you might think. And that's largely having to do with confidentiality issues and health restrictions and so forth. And so, in order to become one of our volunteer musicians, we require everyone to go through a background check and a training to understand what it's like and how you operate in the hospitals. But then on top of that, most hospitals require everyone must have a flu shot. You have to know like what rooms you can go into, what rooms you can't. You've got to understand HIPAA restrictions, which has to do with patient confidentiality and not sharing information, not talking about things that you see and all that. So, you know, at face level, you might think, well, gosh, I'm a great musician. I should just be able to walk in with my guitar and bring some happiness to people. What's the harm in that? But because they're really trying to protect patients and we're the risk to the patients, it's, you know, us bringing in a disease or us sharing patient information is the real risk. It's not like the patients are as much of a risk to us. And so that's why. Now that being said, you know, musicians on call, what we do is, you know, we bring live music to patients' bedsides. And so, you know, we're not the group that you're going to see, you know, having someone play the piano in the lobby or do that type of thing. What we're doing is much more intimate. We're going room to room. And so because of that, it is a bit harder, you know, to do that. Now, the good news for us is that we've been doing this for 21 years now. And so we know how to do it. We know how to do it safely. And we have so many hospitals that we work with around the country that we do a great job at it. But I think people don't realize how much work it does take to make that happen.
So does it work that once you get on the list, do you then like you show up to your day and then you play your day and then you're to the, and then you go again, or are you waiting to just get approved? And then once you're approved, you can fly through and you keep getting called to show up basically.
Yeah. Once you're in the door, then you're good. And then you can just start scheduling hospital visits when you're able to. Now here's the cool thing too, is, you know, we've undergone a lot of transformation through the years. When Musicians on Call started, literally like we had one of those huge calendars that like your mom had growing up, and we'd have like post-it notes saying, well, Zach is going to be at Vanderbilt on Tuesday, and put a post-it note there on Tuesday. We obviously evolved since then. And we do a lot of automation in our scheduling and use, you know, Salesforce and other systems for our program staff to schedule people more efficiently. But what we're building right now is actually an automated software system so that any musician can go through our onboarding process virtually. And then any hospital can go through an onboarding process to become an official hospital. And then the technology will allow them to sync their schedules together so that musicians can actually book their own visits in hospitals anywhere around the country once they're approved. So it's going to allow us to not only get rid of that waiting list by just saying, okay, now everyone can onboard, but also open up the opportunity for more people to play at more places and at a higher frequency. You know, so like at Vanderbilt, where I think we're 3 times a week at Vanderbilt, we might be able to do 3 times a day at Vanderbilt, given, you know, this system and how it works, as long as the hospitals are open to it. So that's where we're going, because we don't want there to be a waiting list. We want everyone to be able to perform. But now I think using technology, we figured out a way to do it, you know, safely and more frequently.
How cool is that? So how do you expand, like when you go into a new market, what does that look like? Like what kind of infrastructure do you have to set up, and how do you do outreach to musicians to educate them if they're unaware about musicians on call? Like when you like, okay, we want to expand to a new market, what are the first steps?
Yeah, so typically, you know, it's interesting. At this point for us, the real obstacle is raising money to support the programs, because hospitals want us. We have tons of volunteers. So those things aren't the issue. It's really like, okay, well, how do we fund it so that we have program staff that can manage these programs and you know, make sure they're running well in all these cities? And again, our investment now in technology is going to drive down those costs significantly so that we could do more with less. But basically, when we would start a new city, like it seems like 10 years ago, but at the beginning of the year before the pandemic, we launched our programs in New Orleans. And when we did that, we had a donor that came forward that said they wanted to help support our programs. And then we would go down there and meet with different hospitals to see which ones, you know, would be open having our programs. And we create partnerships directly with these hospitals. And then after that, we reach out to people we know in that community, whether it's individual artists that have reached out to us in the past, or music schools, or artists that we know that live down there, and just say, hey, we're going to be opening up. Does anyone have any interest? And honestly, in most cases, we've got a waiting list before we even launch the program there. But in all cases, I think, you know, we get a lot of great, you know, turnout. And you know, here's the other thing. It's a great problem to have, but one of our biggest challenges is that we have no turnover. Because once someone gets involved in the program and they see it, they always walk away saying, I feel like I'm getting more out of this than I'm giving. Like, I feel so good. And because of that, they also see that how much of an impact it makes on the people they're playing for. And because of that, you just want to keep replicating that feeling. And so people just don't stop volunteering for us, which I love, but it just means we have to do more to try to create more opportunities for people.
Absolutely. So what's the secret to fundraising, or how do you get the message across? Or like, are you always hosting fundraisers, or is there anything you've found that's been particularly effective for it?
You know, for the most effective thing that we can do is to show people the program and allow people to experience the program, because that's what sells itself. I think one of our challenges is that if people want to support a music charity, oftentimes their mind goes to music education, donating musical instruments to schools that don't have them, those types of things, which is awesome. And then when people think about healthcare, they think of, well, I want to support the Cancer Society or breast cancer research or these types of things, which are also worthwhile. And we sit in the middle. And so because of that, it's a little bit harder for us, because we need to really find people that understand the benefits that music can have on helping us feel better. And so that makes it a little bit harder for us, but that's also why, like when I say people need to experience the program, that once they do and they get it, then it helps us to raise the money we need. Have you seen, by the way, the visit we did last month with Lucas Graham?
No, I didn't see that one.
If you want, I could share my screen and show it to you.
Let's do it.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me pull it up first. All right, there we go. Give me a thumbs up if you can hear it.
Is that Xavier I see sitting in the front?
Yes, this is Xavier.
Hi, Xavier.
Hi.
Who are some of your favorite artists?
Just Graham, Charlie, too.
And that first person you named, Lucas Graham, do you know how to sing the songs? Do you want to sing one for us, if you feel up to it? Okay.
We all got scars. We all get hurt sometimes. We all got scars. Yours are the same as mine. We fall apart. We all get hurt sometimes. We all got scars. Yours are the same as mine.
Oh my gosh, Xavier! What would you say if Lucas Graham was on this video call and could sing just for you?
If he was on this call with me when I sing, I would say that all his songs bring joy to me, and they really have a really good tone and beat and voice.
Wow.
I listen to them all the time, even in school.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. Well, I'm going to let you tell that directly to him. Who's here?
Thank you very much for the song, man. That was very, very beautiful.
Do you believe
it? I'm happy that you like to listen to the songs that I write and that they bring joy to you. I have to say that it brought a lot of joy to me hearing you sing Scars. That was very, very beautiful, young man. You surprised? Do you want to sing Scars together, Xavier?
Yeah.
We'll just do a little acoustic version. Just the two of us, okay? You ready?
We all got scars. We all get hurt sometimes. We all got scars. Yours are the same as mine. We fall apart. We all get hurt sometimes. We all got scars. Yours are the same as mine. We all got scars.
Not as good as you, but I did my best.
Xavier, what do you think?
Ever since I got my incision from the fungal infection, ever since that happened, I wanted to sing it because it's true. We all got scars, and
I'm
sorry.
Yeah, we all got scars, Xavier. And you know what? Singing songs like this makes us stronger. Is that why you like to sing the song? Because it makes you feel a little stronger, knowing that you're
sharing. Oh my God, I'm getting emotional now.
Scars with everybody else, that everybody has them. I just want to say I was really, really happy to be able to sing with you today, and I think it's super strong that you can allow yourself to shed some tears because you're going through something that's pretty tough, and crying can sometimes make it easier because you're letting out a bit of steam. At least that's what I tell myself when I cry.
Thank you so much, Lucas, and thank you, Xavier, for sharing a little bit more of your story and your like incredible talent with us. This was so cool, and we really appreciate you spending some time with Lucas. And Lucas, we appreciate you spending some time with Xavier.
Hey, it's Lucas Graham. I'm on call with Musicians on Call. Please help them deliver the healing power of music by visiting www.musiciansoncall.org.
Ah, Pete, you got me all emotional this morning. Oh my God.
Isn't that so cool?
So did you know, are you doing outreach to see, like, did you know that his favorite artist was going to be Lucas Graham, or did you just happen to have him lined up? How are those moments coming together?
So that specific moment we had, I think it was one of the caregivers at that hospital in Las Vegas that we work with normally reached out to us and said, hey, we've got a kid here that's a huge fan of Lucas Graham. Do you guys know him? And So we're not always doing that type of thing where it's like people are making requests of artists. I mean, most of the time we're not. We're just
you've got the $20 in the hat if you want to make a request.
No, we're not kidding. Doing that. But in a situation like this, where you know we have people that are big fans of artists, like that happened this year with Lauren Daigle, and it's happened before with a number of artists. If we can connect someone to an artist that they really love, we'll do it. So in this case, you know, we were, and as you can see, it's just like, it's just magic. I mean, it's just, you can't even put into words how beautiful that moment is.
Unbelievable. I know, I was getting kind of emotional listening, watching that kid get so emotional. And then I was thinking about when my grandmother was getting very ill. She had horrible dementia, and towards the end, she was so gone, she could barely do anything. But if you sang old show tunes from the 50s, she would respond. Specifically, you sing like Oklahoma, like shows from Oklahoma, Rodgers and Hammerstein. She would sing along, even though she couldn't really speak, she would sing along. I was just thinking about that. It's amazing. I mean, you see this all the day, all the time. I'm not telling you anything new, but it's incredible.
It is amazing, but like, think about that for a second with your grandma. It's like, there's no medicine that they could have given her that would have allowed that to happen. Like, it is this thing that music can do. And it's funny because like in the beginning, like when we started Musicians on Call, it really was kind of a nice thing to do, way to break up the day, to bring some happiness. But in the past 20 something years, like the research has caught up, and now like the science can actually prove that music is helping heal. It's helping to lower stress levels. It's helping patients with pain management. It's helping to lower blood pressure, helping, you know, do things with memory and whatnot. And so it's like, it went from just like a nice thing to do to now hospitals are saying like, no, we actually need this as part of the healing process, which is one of the reasons that we've got so many hospitals requesting our programs.
What's the science like? I mean, it's what you just said, but like, what can you look at? Or are there like certain reports or I guess like journals that have been written, or like what kind of things do you reference for this?
So there's four main areas that we talk about in terms of what music can do towards healing. And those four areas are what it can do to lower stress levels, what it can do to improve patient mood and outlook toward recovery, what it can do to lower blood pressure, and what it can do to help with pain management. Now those areas, there's many more areas that music can help, but in those four areas, there are tons of research from like Cambridge, Oxford, Duke, MIT. I mean, some great schools that study this that have shown that music has actually very measurable effects on those. There was a study done just in this past year at Duke where they gave, there's a medicine that they give to patients before surgery that helps lower their anxiety and stress, because if you're really stressed going into surgery, that can affect your body and how it reacts to the surgery. So they gave one group this pill to help with anxiety, and the other group, they actually had them listen to a half hour of music before the surgery, and there was actually lower levels of stress for those that listened to the music than wow. those that took the pill. And so just thinking about that, not only is it more effective, but now you're lowering costs. You're not like having to pay for pills. You're not having to, if you're a patient, having to ingest, you know, some other pills or chemicals into your body. So there's things like that where, as we continue down this path, I mean, I would not be, you know, surprised if we come to a place where people are written prescriptions to listen to music or, you know, go to a concert. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to get that prescription, but where they realize that music is actually going to help people in part of their healing and recovery.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the episode. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. It really takes you to the front row of everything happening in Music City and the global music industry at large. So if you're interested in subscribing, go to nashvillebriefing.com to check it out. Okay, back to the show.
So when did you guys realize that, because I think when COVID first hit, everybody was like, oh, this will just be like a couple weeks, maybe a month max. Let's just hunker down. We'll get through. We'll be good. Like, did you guys sort of act right away, or when did you realize we have to kind of adjust what we're doing? Otherwise, this isn't going to work the same way.
honestly, about a week after the tornado, maybe the following week, we called it. I mean, we shut down the program, and I told the team, I said, I would expect us to not do in person till the end of 2021.
That's what you said. That's what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, that was back in March. And that's because I know that, you know, we can't, our volunteers can't go into the hospital, you know, during, you know, peak flu season without proof that they have a flu shot. So knowing that this pandemic was going, I was like, we're not gonna be able to go back in person without a COVID shot. And generally that's, you're looking at a best case scenario of 18 months.
Right.
So while I didn't know what exactly was gonna happen, what I did know is that as an organization, we needed to immediately start planning as if we weren't gonna have our in-person program for a while. And therefore let's reallocate all of our energy and resources to something else.
And what, because right now you guys are on track to have your biggest year ever in terms of patients being played for, which I guess makes a lot of sense because, you know, technology allows for that. But how did you start building this infrastructure? Like, what did this look like? What does it look like right now?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, I would love to pretend that, you know, I'm some genius that knew this was coming, and so I built the infrastructure. But that's
let's just go with it.
I wish I was that smart, but I'm not. And what really benefited us, though, is about 8 years ago, we started doing virtual programs for at-home seniors, the folks that were, you know, seniors that were stuck at their homes, couldn't get the facilities, and so we wanted to bring music to them. And then about 3 years ago, we started doing virtual programs at hospitals around the country, and those were hospitals that they wanted our program there, but we weren't able to do the in-person programs yet. So kind of as a stopgap, we were doing virtual programs to them. So in March, when this all went down and we shut down our in-person programs, we just reallocated all of our staff and energy to growing our virtual programs. And so I said, let's get our virtual program going in as many hospitals that can take us. Let's work with our existing hospitals, new hospitals, whoever would want it. Let's get it going. And because we already had the experience doing it and we already had some of the infrastructure set up, you know, it wasn't, we weren't having to like approach hospitals in the middle of a pandemic to help us start a new program. We were like already doing it. And so because of that, we became one of the only charities that was still able to provide services inside hospitals because we had that infrastructure set up. And so we were able to support caregivers and patients virtually. And so that's what we did. And honestly, before the pandemic, we would play for about 5,000 to 7,000 people a month. And since the pandemic started, we've been playing for about 10,000 people or more a month.
Wow.
And all over the country. I mean, we're doing everything from one-on-one visits with, you know, a musician and a patient on a tablet to visits where we're having a musician that's playing for every single TV in every room in the hospital to visits where there's thousands of people in multiple hospitals at the same time.
Wow, unbelievable. With the virtual pharmacy, how does that look? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that I was really curious about.
Yeah, so that one, that's our non-live music version of our program, which is our music pharmacy. And what we did is we worked with Amazon Music to donate tablets and then subscriptions to Amazon Music, and then Bose to donate their nice noise-canceling headphones. And what we do is we provide hospitals with three sets of tablets and three sets of headphones, and they basically can create like a library checkout system for streaming music. So the hospital has these devices with instructions on how to use them, how to clean them, et cetera, and patients can check them out and listen to music in their beds. And so we've been sending those out all across the country so that, you know, if they can't have live music or in-person music, then at the very least, they can be sitting in their beds listening to music. And I got to tell you, especially with some of the older populations, like your grandma that you mentioned, you know, to be able to put on a set of headphones and listen to Oklahoma or listen to old, you know, blues songs that they might not have, you know, they might not have smartphones to do that or access to music. I mean, I've been with veterans where they put on the headphones and they listen to Ray Charles and like tears start coming down their eyes because they're just transformed back into the time with their loved ones when they remember that song and what they were doing. And it allows them to leave, you know, that sterile hospital room for a moment and just really get lost in the music and the memories that it brings forth. And so it's a really valuable program. And, you know, it's something I think for all of us that are younger and have music in our pockets all day long that we take for granted a bit, that for a lot of older people that don't have that same access regularly, it can be transformative to listen to some of those old memories.
And right now, are you playing for, are you seeing patients, I guess this may be like an ignorant question, but are you seeing patients with COVID as well, or are you seeing mostly the same patients with the same conditions that you were seeing before? You know, are they responding to music, or are you even getting in virtually to see COVID patients with music?
Yeah, I mean, we are. I mean, we see everybody. We don't, you know, we never get to pick and choose who we play for. The hospitals really are the ones that decide, like, okay, this person would like music, or this person could use music, whatever. And so we never really know who we're going to play for, but we do play for everybody. And we definitely play for people that have COVID. We play for people battling cancer, people that are having huge surgeries. You know, so we play for all demographics, all conditions. So you never really know what you're going to be dealing with. But one of the things I can say with COVID is, you know, we always say that we play for three types of people. We play for patients, we play for their families, and we play for caregivers. Because those are three groups of people that are always in the hospital that are all dealing with high levels of stress and can benefit from music. But I can tell you with COVID that across the board, the stress levels have gotten so high. Because as a caregiver, you're having to do multiple jobs. You're not just, you know, you're not just a surgeon, but now you're also helping with COVID response, and you're also having to have higher levels of, you know, personal protective equipment on you and everything.
Right.
And it just makes things more stressful and harder to do. And then for patients and families, like, you know, we talk with kids that are battling cancer that can only have one parent visit at a time. Like, they can't even have both parents there and see them at the same time or give them a hug, or they can't have extended family visit them or friends because they're just not allowed in the hospital. So on top of an already difficult situation, you're now adding that isolation and that stress to it, and it's made it really hard for people. And so I think that's one of the reasons our program has not only been useful, but maybe even more impactful during the pandemic, because of how much of a toll it's kind of mentally taking on everybody right now.
Absolutely. It's amazing how music can make you feel connected or make you feel all kinds of things, like we were saying earlier, and a little less lonely. So
that's true.
How do you get involved with the company? Because so prior to this, you were running Big Brothers Big Sisters in Arizona. You were, you know, you're working with MTV. You know, you've been around the nonprofit space for a little bit. But how do you get pulled into Musicians on Call?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I was, like you said, I spent a long time at MTV, and I started there in sales and marketing, and then you know, kind of had a epiphany where I realized that I had kind of moved up in my career pretty quickly and was doing well, but also found that I got to a place where I thought I wanted to be, and then my levels of happiness were also lower than they ever were.
Did that seem like the dream job, MTV? Like, did you think, I've got it made, I'm at MTV, this is huge?
I did, honestly, because I was also there when MTV was kind of near its peak. And I loved working there largely because, like, it was some of the best people in the world. I absolutely loved working with everyone there. But for me personally, the job I was doing just didn't match what I was passionate about. And so I ended up, you know, kind of ending my tenure and doing sales and marketing at MTV, but then getting hired back to do what I told them I wanted to do, which is work on social causes. And so then I spent the last like 2.5 years at MTV working on social cause issues on the network. And so that was my segue into the nonprofit space. But there was a lot of artists that I worked with at MTV that were involved in this charity in New York called Musicians on Call. And so I knew about it from them and had heard about it. And as I'd gone, you know, different directions in my career after MTV, doing things I really cared a lot about, I always kind of came back to this place where I just felt like I really enjoyed most working at that intersection of of, you know, music and these social causes, and how can we use music to really help people, you know, deal with different things and use it as a tool to either elevate issues or help people individually. And so when the opportunity came to work at Musicians on Call, I definitely, you know, jumped on it and was just so grateful that it all worked out. And I've been able to, you know, be here for almost 7 years now.
Did somebody reach out to you, or did you see they were looking to bring in a new person? Like, how did you even connect with the organization?
I knew one or two of the board members of Musicians on Call. And so when they heard, when they knew that there was a position opening up, they had reached out to me and said, hey, is this something you'd consider doing?
Did you come in as the head guy out of the gate, or did you start in another? So, and then what was, like, when you come in, what was kind of like your early task? Like, did they say something to you that was like, we're trying to get this that we've never been able to do, or we're just trying to keep the wheels rolling? Like, what did you feel like your task was coming in?
Yeah, well, I think there was a lot of challenges when I came in. I would say, I mean, I knew what I was getting into, but the board was very clear that, listen, the organization, you know, really needs some work on its strategy and its fundraising, which are two big things for any organization. And when I got in there, I mean, again, Musicians on Call was kind of a small regional, you know, charity. It was in five cities, mostly on the East Coast. And from a fundraising perspective, I mean, it wasn't too far into my tenure at Musicians on Call that we were literally like, had like 1 month left of reserves to like pay our bills. Like we had enough money to pay like one more round of paychecks. And there wasn't.
So they basically gave you a sinking ship. They were like, here are the keys. Like, see if you can turn this around.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Cause honestly, like the program and the people there and our volunteers and supporters were all amazing, but the organization needed some work on its strategy and how do we grow? How do we raise more money, et cetera? And so, you know, that's what we worked on. I mean, that's what my job was from day one, was to build a great team, put together a great strategy and build a vision for where we wanted to go. And, you know, I'd say probably about 3 or 4 years after I started there, the team was highly functioning. I think we had, you know, quadrupled the number of cities we were in. We had doubled the amount of the money we were raising. We had a healthy amount of finances, you know, in the bank as like a rainy day fund for times like this, like during the pandemic when fundraising is harder and you've got money there to kind of get you through, you know, highs and lows in terms of fundraising. So, you know, we've gotten to a place where we're in great standing. I mean, we were recognized by the Nonprofit Times as, you know, one of the top charities to work for in America. You know, the organization has just been recognized, I think, for the effectiveness of what we do. And I think that's important because a lot of people, there are so many great charities out there, and a lot of people worry like, well, is my money going to be well spent if I donate to this charity, or are they doing good work? Is it effective? And, you know, Musicians on Call checks all those boxes, but it's because we spent a lot of time, you know, looking at it through that lens, is saying like, is this an organization we would want to volunteer at? Is this an organization we'd want to donate to? And I also think coming from where I did, coming from the corporate side, and especially at MTV when I was working at different charities and seeing what charities did well and didn't do well, it gave me a good perspective on, you know, what really makes charities work and not work. And, you know, as a team, we came together to try to make Musicians on Call one that is something that people want to support because it really makes a big impact.
How do you create that culture as the leader in the organization? Because you guys have been ranked one of the best organizations to work for. Do you think about that culture, or does that kind of come with just the amazing work that you guys do?
No, honestly, we spend so much time talking about it. We call it our Best Place to Work initiative, a very creative name for it. But that we talk about it multiple times a year. It's part of our ongoing conversations. Literally as a staff, what can we do to make Musicians on Call the best place to work? And it's constantly evolving. And the thing I talk to about the staff all the time is, you know, I want everyone to walk into the office feeling respected, feeling trusted, feeling challenged by their position. And I think when you look at it that way and look at it from that perspective, you want to create a great place to work. You're understanding that if we're spending, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day together, you're going to spend more time with your coworkers than, you know, your family at times. And so you want that to be a place where you enjoy coming to work. And we've done a lot of different things, from making sure that our staff are paid competitively, to providing, you know, full healthcare benefits at no cost to our staff, to having, you know, pre-pandemic work from home Fridays, to creating flex hours so that everyone has to work from 10 to 3, but then you could pick which hours you want to work on either side of it, depending upon your schedule or your family situation. And then, you know, just actually this past couple of weeks, you know, Musicians on Call is now going to be covering mental health care costs for its employees, so that if anyone wants to go and you know, talk to someone, see someone, that Musicians on Call will cover those costs to make sure that during this pandemic, when I think everyone's, you know, dealing with some mental health challenges as we navigate this, that our team is fully supported. And I think when you treat people the right way, whether it's your staff or your volunteers, then they're happier, they want to do more, they want to help out. And that culture is what's allowed us to do so much. Because honestly, as much as we've grown, we haven't really built our staff out. Like, we're not adding all these positions. Like, we're still a small company, but people do more, I think, because they really enjoy coming to work, and we enjoy being around one another.
Good snacks in the Musicians on Call office?
We do have good snacks. We make sure that the fridge is full. We do have a budget each month for snacks and drinks to make sure that everyone is fully nourished during the office time. But that was one of the initiatives that came up during our Best Place to Work conversation.
You need to have good snacks. So what is your day-to-day look like right now during the pandemic? Like, obviously you're not going to hospitals, but are you working with new hospitals, onboarding, you know, checking on people? Like what are you typically doing these days to keep the organization moving forward?
Well, I mean, right now we have daily programs that are virtual programs around the country, bringing music to hospitals. So we've got that going on. So our program team is still just as busy, if not busier, setting all those up every single day. So we've got that going on. The other big thing we're working on is we're building out technology now, as I mentioned before, to kind of automate our processes. So we're currently working with developers that are building out this software and websites so that we can start to schedule and operate, you know, using the software and do more. Because the hope for us is that when the pandemic ends and we can kind of get back to business as usual and going back to hospitals in person, that in many ways we're going to kind of relaunch Musicians on Call using this technology as a way that people can schedule both virtual programs and in-person programs, so that we can connect with as many, you know, patients and families and caregivers as possible, you know, once we're able to.
Absolutely. So I know that, you know, I know that you're involved with a ton of different genres, but as one genre, it feels like country music is just so integrated into it. Is that, in terms of a genre, is that probably the most integrated genre with Musicians on Call, or is that not true? And why do you think that is? Why does country music get so attached to it?
Yeah, I got to tell you, it isn't intentional in the sense that we didn't set out and say, well, let's work with more country music artists. Because we do work with artists of all different genres, but what we have found is that the culture is just a little bit different in country music. People are very philanthropic. It tends to be a little easier working with country music artists and their teams to schedule these types of things. Now I can say this, all the musicians that volunteer with us are amazing. Like, we don't have any issues with the people that volunteer with us and anything like that. But I can tell you that there's, like, you know, there's situations where it's like, you know, there might be a pop band that you've never heard of, and there's, you know, 25 people on the email weighing in about this, that, and the other thing. And then we'll do a hospital visit with Keith Urban, and we'll be like, well, he's just driving himself to the hospital. He'll text you when he gets there. And it's like, okay, so this is like one of the biggest artists in music in general, and it's so easy to work with him. But I do think that's just kind of because it's part of the culture in country music. And I do think that Nashville in particular is a very philanthropic town, where you also have a lot of people, a lot of artists living in one place. Whereas in other music genres, you know, obviously New York and LA are big hubs, but they're not like consolidated into one area like they are here in Nashville. And so I think for us, we've really benefited from, you know, the generosity of country music artists and their teams who really do care about, you know, giving their time to make people feel better. I mean, we've gotten to this point at Musicians on Call where, you know, we actually have artists reaching out to us, you know, versus us having to chase down everybody that's saying, hey, like, I haven't done a visit in a while. Can I come and do a visit? Can we get that scheduled? Which is a great feeling, but it just, again, it speaks to just the wonderful people that we have, you know, volunteering with us every day.
Absolutely. And it feels like Nashville or country music is just rooted in an acoustic guitar, three chords acoustic guitar. It's maybe easier to travel around with country music than it is a big pop band or, you know, whatever that is. You can really express what country music is with a guitar, which happens to be a great form of traveling. Do people go with other instruments though? Like now that you're in New Orleans, are people showing up with like small horn sections?
Well, it's tough because you do want to maintain the respect of other patients around there. So nothing too crazy, but I would say most of our musicians either bring their own guitar or are accompanied by a guitar player. We do have in a lot of our hospitals a keyboard that we leave there that's on a cart that if people are playing the piano, they can bring that around. I've definitely been with artists that have violins or stand. We actually have one group that we've gone around with that has like a violin and a stand-up bass, and they wheel that around the hospital, which is fun. We have a couple percussionists that bring like muted instruments. You know, Mickey Raphael, who is Willie Nelson's longtime harmonica player. He's done a lot of programs with us, playing his harmonica, which he's got the best gig in all of music because when he travels with his instrument, it literally like packs in a little case like this big, his I don't know how many, 7 or 8 harmonicas, and then he's good to go. But it's mostly guitar, but we do get some other instruments.
How cool is that? So what's the best way if you want to volunteer, because I know there are ways to volunteer without being a musician, but if you're a musician or you're not a musician, you want to volunteer, I guess, are there any real opportunities being a non-musician right now during COVID? But I guess what's the best way for people to get involved?
Yeah, so I mean, everyone can go to our website, musiciansoncall.org, to start the process. No matter what you're doing or where you're coming from or what your background is, you got to go to our website because that is the first step for anyone that wants to volunteer with us, because that's where you start kind of like the virtual onboarding process. But the one thing that's beautiful about Musicians on Call in terms of volunteering is that we need both musical and non-musical volunteers. So there's a lot of us like myself who would make people's days worse trying to play an instrument that we wouldn't want playing in the hospital. But we have a volunteer position, which is called a volunteer guide. And these are the people that bring musicians room to room when we're in person or facilitate the virtual programs when we're doing them virtually. And so you have to be a musician to do that. And so we're still using our volunteer guides to moderate these virtual performances. So people can sign up at our website to do that. Realistically though, there's limited opportunities because of the pandemic in terms of what we can do and how many volunteers we can use at this time. But that being said, in the next year when we launch this new software that's going to automate scheduling and everything, you know, there's going to be a ton of opportunities. So it's good for people to get in now, so that when that launches, they're ready to go.
Be ahead of the curve. Get in now. Musicians on Call. Have we left anything out? Has anything been unsaid? What do we need to cover here at the very end? Have we said it all?
You know, I feel like we've said it all. I mean, you know, I can go on and on, but I mean, the truth is that, you know, we're just so grateful for all of our volunteers that make this possible. And I think between our staff and our volunteers that were able to react quickly during the pandemic to provide support for, you know, caregivers and patients right now, it just, we feel fortunate to be able to do what we do. We feel like we're blessed to be able to do this for a living, especially because like our mission is really relevant right now. And we feel for all those other charities that do great work who, because of this pandemic, have had to close their doors or lay off people. We don't take that for granted because we're blessed to have a mission that's relevant right now. And so we want to make sure we do more of it. And so all of our volunteers and supporters, and even honestly, like talking to you and doing this podcast and sharing the story allows us to continue to do that. And so I just think, you know, we all play a role in, especially now during this pandemic, in trying to make life a little better for one another. You know, talking to you is part of that. People volunteering with us is part of that. People donating to us is part of that. And so we're just really grateful. We're happy to be able to do it. And we feel lucky to work with the amazing volunteers that we do.
Pete, you're amazing and your team is amazing. Any fun stories or anything special? I mean, the Lucas Graham thing is amazing. I've heard you tell the story about someone showing up and playing a patient's wedding song, a Ray Charles song that was their wedding song, and it was totally random. Any moments recently that have just blown you away or amazing connections between a patient and a musician?
Gosh, I mean, we did a virtual visit over the summer with Lauren Daigle, and there was a little girl who I believe she had like some sort of a brain tumor or brain cancer, and she was probably like, you know, 10 or 12 years old. And as she was having surgery, one of the first things she did when she came out of surgery was pick up her ukulele and play one of her favorite Lauren Daigle songs. And that kind of like helped her, you know, like cognitively, but also, you know, in a healing sense after her surgery, was playing that song. So we were able to connect her virtually with Lauren Daigle, and they got to sing the song together. And when you see those moments where it's like a full circle moment, where it's a patient who was using music to help them recover, help them feel better and heal, and then being able to connect them with that artist that was responsible for creating that music that they may not realize was helping someone heal so tangibly. I mean, again, when you see it, both parties walk away, I think, feeling amazing. Like Lauren had to walk away feeling like, gosh, like I can't believe that something I did is changing a little girl's life who's battling, you know, this brain cancer. In the same way, this little girl is saying, I would have never thought I would have met Lauren Daigle, you know? And so the ability to create those situations, thanks to these generous artists, is amazing. We had I'll tell you one more story. Another girl that we had, that we played with this summer, she was, I believe she was, I don't know exactly what happened. I'm not gonna try to unintentionally misremember what happened, but she ended up being in a non-responsive condition in the hospital. Non-responsive meaning like coma type situation. And they tried everything nothing seemed to be working to kind of make her responsive. And so a music therapist, this was out in UCLA, a music therapist came in and said, well, have you tried music yet? And they said, the parents said, no, we haven't tried that, but you know, she's non-responsive. I don't know if it's gonna make a difference, but might as well give it a shot. And so the music therapist said, well, what's, like, does she have any favorite music, any favorite songs? And she said, the parents said, well, her favorite artist is Andrew McMahon. And that was the first concert that she went to with her dad, was to see, I think, Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness play. And, you know, if we can play one of those songs. And so they played it. And as they were playing that song, a tear came out of the girl's eye. you know, like she was reacting to the music. And they couldn't believe it. And so they started playing more and more music for this girl. And fast forward to where we were this summer, the girl was still in, you know, still recovering, but she was responsive now and she was able to move and communicate and everything. And so we were able to have Andrew McMahon, you know, play her that song that, you know, they played for her that kind of brought her out of the unresponsive state. And to see him playing that song for her, I think it was Cecilia and the Satellites, is the name of the song. While, you know, her and her mom are there like in tears, remembering everything they had gone through. And just knowing that that, like, that song had so much meaning in their life and brought so much power and change to their life. Again, it's like you see that happening. You're like, we have to do more of this. Like, how do we make this these moments?
I'm getting emotional just hearing you tell this story.
Yeah, I mean, it's why we act with such urgency and why we work so hard at Musicians on Call is because when you see that, you're like right now, there's someone that could probably be benefiting from music that we're not reaching. And so we have to do more. And I think that's the thing is why we've grown so much. And we're even during the pandemic, we've been growing is because we feel that sense of urgency. Like if we can provide relief for just one more person, then that's going to be worth our efforts. And so that's why we keep, you know, doing what we do.
Unbelievable. I mean, I'm an amateur guitar player. I pick up my guitar probably every day, especially during this pandemic, because it puts me in a state of mind. It's one of the few things that I feel really great doing right now as I'm stuck in home and my issues are in a fraction of what some of the patients that you're seeing are. And I can't imagine how amazing it is for those patients and for those artists to get involved. So Pete, thank you for doing what you're doing. It's God's work. And I'm sure we're going to continue seeing it everywhere as in as many places as we can.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on. And, I always enjoy getting your emails. I'll be looking forward to the one that is about Musicians on Call.
It's coming. We're going to have a themed Musicians on Call email probably next week, I think. I like this background, by the way. Is this a green screen or is this really your wallpaper?
No, this is actually the wallpaper in my bedroom.
You know, sometimes I see people with these really nice apartments and I go, damn, that person's got a really great apartment. And then it turns out it's a green screen. And then I look at this, I'm like, that's pretty cool. Is that a green screen? No, it's the real wallpaper.
This is one of our many home improvement projects during the pandemic as we did some wallpapering and painting and everything else. So now I've got a little background.
How cool is that? So do you play anything? Because you said you wouldn't want, no patient would want you in a hospital playing, but do you pick up an instrument ever or not at all?
No. I really don't. I mean, I grew up playing the trombone. I've got, you know, some guitars and drums around the house, but honestly, those are really for my friends that are musicians that are really talented to come over and play versus me. I started and stopped a couple times trying to learn the guitar, and I've made peace with the fact that I love music, but perhaps my role in it is to be a listener and an advocate for it versus a performer.
Absolutely. Who are some of your favorite artists, or who are some of your early artists that you fell in love with?
Gosh, I mean, like I would to rattle off a couple. I love Muse, Dave Matthews, Outkast, Jason Isbell, Counting Crows, Linkin Park. I mean, those are the ones that kind of
that's a good list
jump
right there.
Out at the top of my head.
Dave Matthews, yeah. I remember in high school, we used to always, I probably saw 10 or 12 Dave Matthews shows in high school. We would travel with a group of five friends. We'd tailgate, we'd barbecue. I love Dave Matthews. I have such good memories around Dave Matthews concerts. At this point, I've probably seen him 25 or 30 times.
Yeah, me too.
It's like, they're so good live. Unbelievable. And Jason Isbell is one of my favorite artists.
And it was actually funny.
I
was talking with my daughter yesterday, and as we were listening to Taylor Swift, and I was like, you know, I gotta tell you, I actually think that Taylor Swift is probably one of my top three favorite artists, because if I was to think about all the songs of hers that I really, really like, it's probably as much or more than any other artist I know. And I always listen to, Well, we listen to Taylor Swift a lot around here, but it came to that realization. I was like, you know what? I think she might be probably one of my favorite.
She might be in,
so
in the top.
Add Taylor Swift to the list.
What I love, because I always nerd out and I read a lot of like guitar publications, like Premier Guitar or whatever it is, because I'm a big guitar nerd. And every now and then you'll see this article. And it's always this article, like Taylor Swift is the next Van Halen. And what they mean is that like Van Halen inspired so many people to pick up an electric guitar and learn how to shred. And how many people did Taylor Swift inspire to buy an acoustic guitar and learn how to play acoustic guitar and write country songs? Like, she has had such a big influence on other people wanting to get into music. I feel like the majority of people I know in Nashville are like, I moved to Nashville because I bought a Taylor Swift record and I became obsessed with her. Like, the amount of impact that she's had on the city is incredible. I remember seeing her live at Nissan, I guess it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, and she was like, this city has changed since I first moved here. I can't believe how much the city has changed. I was like, it's kind of insane because you're the one who changed the city in many ways. you're the one that was the catalyst for this in some ways.
It's funny. I was telling this story yesterday. I remember when I worked at MTV in New York, and I can't remember what year it was, but I remember riding the elevator with Taylor Swift and I think her dad up to the CMT floor. And this was either before her first album or when her first album was out. A lot of artists would come in and play like two or three songs for the executives to kind of promote their music and stuff. And I just remember her just sitting there with her acoustic guitar in hand and her curly hair and asking who she was and then had never heard about her before. And then fast forward to where we are now. And it's like, she's the biggest artist in the world.
Did she have the charisma then? Did you go, oh my God, this girl is unbelievable?
Well, it was literally like a 20-second elevator ride. I wish, the more I tell the story, I can probably make it into more of an event than it really was. But
each time I hear you tell it, you're adding layers to it.
Yeah, the truth is, it was about 20 seconds and we, you know, exchanged a 10-second conversation in that 20-second elevator ride. But I do remember it was you know, I've been a fan for a long time. She's awesome.
That's awesome. Pete, stay well out there. I hope we get the chance to connect in person whenever it's safe to do so. And I'm always following Musicians on Call on Instagram and seeing what you guys are up to. And it warms my heart to see it. That maybe sounds cliche, but it does. It brings me joy because music did so much for me and I don't even have a fraction of some of the issues that these people are going for. So I can't imagine what it does to them. So Pete, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thanks for your time too. And I look forward to meeting at some point in person.
Absolutely. Stay well. Talk to you soon.
All right. You too. See ya.
Thanks again for tuning in. And thanks again to Pete for taking the time to come on to the show. So cool talking with him and hearing about everything the organization is doing. And by the way, if you're interested in learning more or even getting involved as a volunteer or a musician, go to musiciansoncall.org to check it out and learn more, because this is an amazing organization, so important, especially right now. And yeah, if you're interested in getting involved, that's again, musiciansoncall.org. Check it out. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, subscribe to our newsletter at nashvillebriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.